We are Rogue Media Sports.
A lot can happen between falling in love with a house online and owning it. Between imagining living there and breathing in your new home for the first time. Having an advocate who can help you navigate the complex world of financing, inspections, negotiating, analyzing the market, and talking through any anxieties that may pop up, that can make all the difference. That's what the expertise of a Realtor can do for you. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors and bound by a code of ethics. Because that's who we are.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
It is the Doomsday Podcast. Cowboys with a 37-18 win over the New York Giants. Final score, not totally indicative of the football game. Cowboys do pull away late, but it was ugly from the beginning. I don't want to put this off any longer. We do have a new title sponsor, and I want you to say a very special welcome to the Hudson Financial Group. The Hudson Financial Group.
We really attract people with money, don't we?
Yeah, they got money. And, I mean, this man comes from Carthage. Randy Hudson does. He grew up in Carthage, played college football coming out of Carthage at North Texas. And then the Hudson Financial Group has been, they've been building relationships for over the past 31 years. And, Ed, they take care of their clients from all areas of the business world and other endeavors. Thing I like about them, they'll do the commercial. They'll do the commercial folks, but they'll also do the individuals who need some help with home or auto insurance. Also, the large construction group or a complex financial plan. Ed, after what you've been through the last few years, I mean, I would say that's a complex financial situation, although the money never stopped coming in.
I was going to say, I was going to have Jerry call them.
Yeah.
He might have some needs that they could meet.
Yeah, I think they would help Jerry. They've got some folks in kind of his area code, and then they have some folks that, hey, they're just looking for some help with insurance and straightening out their finances, and they do an incredible job. This is Hudson Financial Group, and again, we thank them so much. You can find them on Facebook, and then also the office number over there is 469-402-0320. I asked the other day, I said, well, Randy, who do you call when you go over there? He said, hey, start with me. Start with the big man. I'll send you to the right place. So, hey, ask for Randy Hudson. We'll see where he sends you after that. But the Hudson Financial Group, pleased, and it's a pleasure to have them on board the Doomsday Podcast. All right, Ed, speaking of Doomsday, this was feeling like the Jets game all over again. Cooper goes out with an injury. They're down 12-3. They kind of finally got things going right before the half. If not for some kind of ridiculous clock management by Pat Shurmur, the Giants should have absolutely been winning that game at halftime.
Well, you know, and it's not what you're looking for. When you're the Cowboys, you're a first-place team in the NFC East, you're coming off your bye week. You would think Jason Garrett and his staff would have this team ready to play against an opponent that they've routinely dominated, and instead, you know, they come out, first throw of the game, interception by Dak Prescott. First time he's ever done that. First time he's ever had his initial pass of a game intercepted. Then, you know, Randall Cobb's touchdowns nullified by a Tyron Smith holding call leads to a field goal. And Brett Maher misses a field goal on their third series. And then Cobb loses the ball in scoring position on their fourth series. And they really didn't get it turned around until the last 10 seconds of the first half when Dak Prescott escaped the pocket, made the nice throw to Blake Jarwin for a 42-yard touchdown. And then Xavier Woods got the turnover on the series you're talking about, the really dubious decision by Pat Shurmur to be throwing the football three straight times when he could have gone into halftime with a lead. And that's something the Giants hadn't really had. They played the four games in October without ever leading once in any of those games. They could have had a halftime lead on the Cowboys But they blew that by throwing the pick to Xavier Woods, who the Cowboys then turned that into a field goal. And I think that's one of the encouraging things that we are seeing now. And it certainly turned into a frenzy in the second half tonight. But the defense is finally starting to create some turnovers and give this offense a better chance to score some points.
All right, well, let's start right there. Let's start with some of the defense's performance, because what they did is, I think at least, what, four times that I remember, four of the five times the Giants got in the red zone, they held the Giants. Rosas, well, you love that guy, don't you? Aldrich Rosas. They held him to field goals, and that really kind of kept the score manageable. And, I mean, if it were a team a little bit better than the Giants that could actually punch the ball in the end zone, they would have been in some serious trouble in this game. And I think we do have to take our hat off. You know, everybody spent a lot of the week talking about, oh, who, you know, could they go finally replace Jeff Heath? Well, Jeff Heath gets hurt in this game. The Cowboys at least made an attempt to go get Jamal Adams from the Jets, and of course he had his feelings hurt and all of that. But thought the safety play was really good in this game. Xavier Woods goes over, makes the really nice interception, and then I thought Darian Thompson came in the game and really did some nice things and made some big hits. So I would say of all the things that concern you in this game, safety play really wasn't it.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, as they now reach the midpoint of their season, I thought all along that if they were going to make a serious run and get deep into the playoffs, which seems to be the mandate for Jason Garrett to keep his job in the next season and get a contract extension, that the phase of the game that had to become a bigger factor is the defense. And in this game, you know, they're playing a rookie quarterback who holds the ball too long, ranks among the league leaders in turnovers, and the Giants, who have exposed their quarterback to more pressure than any team in the league, had to go up against two pass rushers the Cowboys didn't have in week one, in Robert Quinn, who was suspended, and Michael Bennett, who was basically sitting on the bench in New England. And so they were able to really take advantage of that opportunity. You know, Daniel Jones had all three turnovers tonight. He had the interception. He had two fumbles, one of which was returned for a defensive touchdown by Jordan Lewis. So Daniel Jones leaves this game with 16 turnovers, tied with Jameis Winston for the most in the league. And if there's anything you don't want to be tied with Jameis Winston in, it's turnovers, because that's a bad, bad thing. But, you know, the Cowboys defense has now created seven turnovers in the victories over the Eagles and the Giants. And I saw an interesting stat today that the Cowboys actually this offseason have spent more money on defense than any team in the league. They signed DeMarcus Lawrence and Jalen Smith to extensions. They traded for Robert Quinn. They brought in Michael Bennett. They spent a league-high $115.7 million in guaranteed money on their defense, and ranking second, the undefeated 49ers at $112.5 million. So you expect them to get a lot more out of a defense, given the money that Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones have invested. And Michael Bennett, you know, came up with a sack, three quarterback hits. I think he's the 19th player in NFL history to have at least one sack with five different franchises. Now, obviously, there's serious flaws with the guy, or he wouldn't be playing for five different teams and three teams in the last 19 months. But maybe he can be a big factor in the second half of the season for the Cowboys.
Certainly was active. Needs to learn to not line up in the neutral zone there.
Yeah, he has a couple of that.
Infractions. Probably needs to get that together. But the guy did make some hits, and they made Daniel Jones feel that early in the game. I mean, he was taking some massive hits. I thought Lawrence was really good in this game. You know, he's spent part of the year people wondering why his sack totals aren't up there a little bit more. I thought he was extremely active, even down there around the goal line, you know, coming down the line there to make a play on Saquon behind the line of scrimmage. Thought that was a great play. As you might expect, as the quotes are starting to come out of the Cowboys locker room and Jerry this evening, I'm taking a peek at all of this. The Black Cat was asked about, was a lot of the talk, and Ed, I don't know, you've covered a lot of games. Have you ever seen a live animal make its way onto the field? I know there was a squirrel game a few years ago. I would always think there's probably plenty of wildlife kind of where you're from, the Denver area. But have you ever seen anything like that, a black cat scampering around the field?
I don't recall anything like that, but it seemed to me like the television should have treated it like a streaker and not shown it to encourage that kind of behavior of feral cats in the future.
That's right. That's right. Every cat now is going to be trying this and try to get on the field. Jerry Jones quoted saying, he told reporters after the game, "There's the cage over there for my cat. He was so mean, I didn't even want to look at him." So there's Jerry, and then also DeMarcus Lawrence on the cat. DeMarcus Lawrence, a man who cusses even more than Stretch, he said, "First thing to cross my mind, no joke, was like, F, they got bad luck now. It just turned on them. If a damn black cat runs on a football field on Monday Night Football, you might as well call it quits. I hate cats, too." So it was like, F. So he was very...
You know, I think there are analytics now about everything, and Bill Barnwell from ESPN tweeted out that once the cat was spotted, the Giants had previously had a 64% win expectancy when the cat came out, and that dropped down to 35.5% when it made its appearance. And I do believe the numbers bear that out, that the Cowboys actually did benefit significantly or perform much better after the black cat sighting.
They did. They it was like 10-3 since then, or 17-3 right after that. So it was a good showing by the black cat there in the Meadowlands. All right, Cowboys improved to 5-3. We hit the defense. Before we have our say...
You know, I wanted to make one more point about the defense.
Oh, please.
Which we normally talk about the offense first, but I think it's merited here. You know, I thought Leighton Van Der Esch's absence with that neck injury, and remember when he was drafted, there were a lot of teams that graded him down because of concerns that they had with his medical, as far as it related to neck and shoulder injuries throughout his college career. So I think this merits some watching as we go forward.
Yeah.
But I thought his absence was coming at a really bad time for Dallas, and that it could significantly impact their defense because they were playing two of the most dynamic running backs in the league back-to-back with Saquon Barkley tonight and then Dalvin Cook of the Vikings next week. But, you know, Sean Lee moved into his weak side linebacker spot, and Saquon Barkley now 0-4 in his career against the Cowboys and had 28 rushing yards. That matches the lowest total of his career in a full game. So the Cowboys were able to make up for the absence of Van Der Esch, at least in this game.
I like it. I like it. They were, and you're right, he's always worn that neck thing, and so it bears watching to see. All right, before you and I break down the offense, it is time to go to our resident scout and coach, Glenn Stretch Smith, who's been doing some TV work tonight on Channel 8 WFAA, and it is time to get our grades from Stretch. Here he is. And boy, it is an exciting time to have Glenn Stretch Smith joining us on the Doomsday Podcast. Of course, our good friend, Hudson Financial Group has joined up with us, Stretch, and that's a big moment for us. All the estate planning, property casualty insurance, and a variety of consulting services. This is big time, and boy, they got the rich folks out there. They got folks that are just getting started, and they really... So say a shout-out to Randy Hudson and Hudson Financial Group for coming on board as our big-time title sponsor this week. Stretch?
Well, you know, he's a great guy. I mean, I've known him for a few years, and he really knows what he's doing. I know he's got two offices. He's got the place in Rockwall, and also has a place in Carthage. And it's a family business, and a guy that, again, I've known for a while. He's easy to get to. He's, you know, just a really all-around guy, great all-around guy, and I'm glad he's joining us here at Doomsday. He's a perfect fit for us.
That's right. Hudson Financial Group, insurance and investments. They'll take care of all your investment needs, and they do a great job. Stretch, it is a 37-18 win over the New York Giants. Giants fall to 2-7. Cowboys improved to 5-3. Let's start with the offensive side of the ball. That performance right off the top. I mean, they're down 12-3. This thing had all the makings of another Jets-like performance. They fall behind. A couple of turnovers. He first play from scrimmage, he throws the ball right to Bethea. I want to call him Bethea, but I guess they call him Bethea. And he catches the ball. They're able to hold him there. What were you thinking in that for most of that first half? That was kind of a struggle for the Cowboys.
Well, yeah, that first play, I mean, for him, obviously it was an RPO, it was a run-pass option. He never saw the safety drop down, and he goes back, reads to throw the slant, and, I mean, throws it right to him. That's alarming to me. I'm not a run-pass option guy. I can't stand that. I've always kind of felt like that stands for ridiculous protection offense. I'm not a fan of that, but you know, they have had some success with it this year, but he never saw the safety. And as I look at it, and you look at how he played, he being Dak, really the whole game. I mean, I didn't think he was very sharp. He made some good throws, but I mean, I did not think he was very sharp. I didn't think his feet inside the pocket. It looked like he had an off week. It looked like I know he'd had his wisdom teeth out, and I'm sure he's been eating little Campbell's chicken noodle soup for a while. But boy, he did not play well. They started really poorly. I thought the team was flat. Now again, you know, let's start with Dak, because I think that's where it all starts and ends with. And he made some good throws, but I'm really concerned about his accuracy and his consistent accuracy. That bothers me right off the bat, and I mean, I'm just barely giving him a B for what he did, because there were some throws that could have been made tonight that he missed, and the interception really concerning to me, and I'm starting to wonder, you know, guys, is the contract situation weighing on him? I think there's a few variables here that are starting to be an issue as I see him and I'm watching him week in, week out.
All right, quarterback gets a B, and it looked like the defense really bailed them out there in holding the Giants to field goals, and that really helped the Cowboys climb back into this thing, especially right there before the half. Let's look at running back real quick. We had some Mr. Pollard had some mistakes. He muffed one back there on the on a kickoff return, and then he just had some poor plays early in this game. Zeke ends up having a big game and ran extremely hard, finishes with 23 carries for 139 yards. What would you give the running backs?
Here's what I say, and obviously Zeke runs hard, but I think the thing that was most impressive to me tonight was both of those guys in pass protection. I mean, they do a great job of picking up linebackers, blitzing linebackers. I mean, there's so many things that I point to the running backs, and I think I would not have gotten bored with running the football. And I felt like, you know, we've talked about Kellen Moore and who's calling the plays. It's almost like they're bored running the football. I don't know what's wrong with about 7 yards a clip, which is what he was averaging in the first half. I mean, I would have, you know, he makes that gesture, keep feeding it to him. I'd have fed him like the damn Russians were in St. Louis and he was eating his last meal. I'd have kept giving it to him and just hammering him, because really, I think that's the strength of this football team, and both of those running backs played very well tonight. I don't like that Pollard muffed that first kick, but when you look at overall how they play, how they block, how they finish runs, how they catch the ball out of the backfield, it's all plus, plus, plus. I'm giving the running backs an A tonight.
All right, and the wide receivers, Cooper left the game with a knee injury. It shades of the Jets game, having to leave that game early, but he does come back and then has the big long touchdown where he catches the ball across the middle there and then takes it to the house. 4 catches for 80 yards. Let's lump the tight ends with this, because Jarwin had the one big play. He always makes big plays in New York. Witten had a ton of catches. What did you make of that whole group?
Well, I mean, it's when they're clicking on all cylinders. I mean, it's a good group of players now. I mean, it was unfortunate that Cobb made the catch and the guy, you know, his helmet hits right on it and he fumbled that ball. But overall, again, when I look at and it's not just catching the ball for the receivers and the tight ends, it's how they block the perimeter. And I thought that was a big part of why they were able to run the football, how they blocked, that they blocked the perimeter. Obviously, Gallup made the good play, got the ball in the end zone. But this group of pass catchers and let's say outside edge blockers and the things that they do is very impressive. And And I'm giving that entire group a B+. Great job tonight. Great job by Jarwin to pick that ball up and go stick it in the end zone. I wish that Cobb hadn't fumbled that, or it would have been an A. But in that critical situation, I wish he would have just stuck it up in there and got the first down instead of turning that ball over. And because of that turnover, you know, and leaving them in the game, leaving the Giants in the game, that's the only reason I gave him a B+.
All right, O-line. Obviously, like you said, the run game was there seemingly most of the evening. When they had to have it, they got some really good runs. And, you know, other than there were a couple of times Dak got in some trouble back there, but I would say the two holding penalties, bit of a concern. Tyron Smith, that one helped to wipe out, negate a touchdown throw to Cobb early in the game on a really nice-looking route that he ran to get open. What did you make of the offensive line's play?
Well, yeah, and he didn't have to hold there. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, they traded for the Giants, traded the Jets, and got Williams in there. And obviously, he's a force inside, but and he beat Connor Williams one time, and we can go and nick them for that, and I certainly will. But when you look at how they block the running game, how they were open holes, how they get a hat on a hat, what they do with their zone steps, this, again, the strength of the football team, guys, they've got to run the football, they've got to have really good play with the running backs, and then they've got to take their shots down the field. And this offensive line tonight gave them a chance to do that. I don't like the holding calls, and because of that, that keeps them out of the – you know, what would be an upper echelon grade, and I gave them a B because of that critical holding call and the fact that he didn't have to do it. That's the thing that concerns me. But this is a really good offensive line. I see Connor Williams getting better every week, and you know, if they continue to grow and get better, this team will get deep into the playoffs as long as they can ride that offensive line. A B tonight.
All right, B for the offensive line. Let's go to the secondary. They've been you've beat up on them at some points this year, the cornerbacks especially. I thought, obviously, the X-Man, Xavier, came in there, and Woods made an extremely nice play, tracking that ball, getting the interception, and then he and Thompson both delivered some big licks at one point caused a fumble in there. I thought there were some really good hits in the ball game. From especially those two players, seemed like the Cowboys found a little something at safety with Jeff Heath having to leave that game with an injury.
Yeah, he went out and they didn't miss a beat. Now the ball, you know, it's not Xavier's fault, that ball that set up in the air right there before the half. But I do like that he got there, he picked that ball off, and it looked like a similar route that the Jets were able to beat the Cowboys on when. Louisiana, again, just kind of lets him release up inside. But he did a great job of playing over the top. I think he made a great point. I mean, they played physical. I mean, both of those guys, Thompson and Woods, will hit you. I like the safeties. I'm still concerned. I'm still concerned with the corners, guys. I mean, to me, again, tonight, a critical situation. Byron Jones lets him catch up. That one-handed catch, I mean, Ryan, I believe it was Golden Tate, caught the one-handed ball right there.
Gorgeous catch.
It looked like he just lacks ball skills to go and make a play on the ball in the air, and that really concerns me. I mean, I'm just telling you, he and Awuzie, their ball skills concern me. But the safety's played well, and overall, you got to give that group a B.
All right, and linebackers without Vander Esch in there, Sean Lee made some plays, brought the wood, and had a really good hit on Saquon. Obviously, Saquon got loose on that one screen that he took I think it was a 65-yard play. What did you make of the linebackers?
Well, the linebackers played really good. I mean, really well. I was very impressed with how they – in the red zone, I mean, they were where they were supposed to be. And the Cowboys were stunting and trying to get some guys, you know, trying to get New York into bad plays. And they did it all night long. I mean, and they were very sound with what they were doing. Sean Lee, great job, great open field tackler. Now they hit him one time for the screen pass. And obviously he was a half step late getting there. It's hard to ding him for that. But linebacker play tonight, I thought was excellent, and I'm going to give that group a B+.
All right, and defensive line with Michael Bennett joining up, and then obviously early on, it seemed like DeMarcus Lawrence really was playing with a lot of fire and passion, and he got involved. What did you make of the entire defensive line?
Yeah, great job tonight. I mean, really, you saw Woods, you saw Covington, you saw Armstrong. I mean, we saw some guys who we had, who we also haven't talked about all year. And I thought that Bennett, you know, bull rushed his man one time, got the sack, and he jumped off sides a couple times, and that bothered me. I mean, they'll get that cleaned up. But this defensive line, that's going to be, the Cowboys are going to go as far as their offensive line, defensive line, and their run game can take them. Tonight, they were dominant. I mean, I thought the defensive line really played well. And if it wasn't for Bennett jumping off sides twice, they would have gotten an A. And because of that, I mean, he's got to can't jump off sides in those situations. And I'm going to give that group a B+ as well. I think the one other group, Matt, that I want to talk about is the kid coverage team. I mean, twice they allowed the Giants to return the ball almost to midfield. That concerns me. I mean, all year you've seen Maher thumping it deep, and they tried. They must have seen something on film that they liked, and they tried it twice, and they got it ran out to midfield. That's a problem, and because of that alone, I'm going to give the kid coverage units a C- and a borderline F. You can't let them get the ball out at midfield, especially on two back-to-back kickoff returns.
Yeah, that short field will get you in trouble, and you can't always depend on the defense to constantly hold these guys down in the red zone. Stretch, really appreciate it staying up late with us tonight, and good TV work from you on WFAA, the build-up to the game, and I know you were able to get on there and make some points, and I think Joe is doing some trick-or-treating over at DeMarcus Lawrence's house, so he had the kind of lighthearted nature stuff, but you came in there with a very hard-hitting type analysis, so I appreciate that.
Hi, I appreciate you guys. Have a great night, man.
All right, there he was, volatile as always. The only, and I know since he was in a separate place tonight, Ed, you didn't get to visit with Stretch there, but he gave a C-. His lowest grade was a C-. Who do you think got the C-? Which aspect of this team do you think angered Stretch the most?
Special teams.
Yes. Special teams coverage.
A lot of big returns allowed on kickoffs tonight.
Yeah, and I can't remember if that was Latimer on maybe a couple of those, but they did get they got some things done and got that thing out to midfield, and we're working with the short field, and that put the defense in a tough spot. They're going to have to do a much better job on that, and we'll see how they address that moving forward. I mean, you think about it, Ed, kickoffs, normally in this league, you just don't even see them. You know, people just kind of let the ball bounce into the end zone. And on this night, there were a couple that they brought them out there and some problems, and that needs to be addressed before this becomes, you know, a major issue. Now, you mentioned the kicker. The kicker did hit the nice 52-yarder to put him up 13-12. He missed a 54-yarder. And I think you'll like the fact that on Twitter, I was telling them right before the half to not get too close for him. You wanted to stay out there, and they did go ahead and complete one to Jason Witten to get him in kind of a decent range of about 52 yards. Looking on the offensive side of this thing, that was disturbing that Dak came out and threw the interception immediately. It wasn't much longer after that that he fumbled a snap. He just didn't really, I don't know if he wasn't paying attention or whatever, but that one got away from him. He was a little loose, even on the throw to Jarwin. I don't know. You know, you'd think if you had a guy that talented, that tall, that fast, you'd probably give him more than one target. But, hey, if you're only going to give him one target, he knew what to do with it.
Yeah, he's a giant killer. You know, I think if you look, I think it's interesting to take a big picture look at this offensive situation as we begin to talk about that. You know, the Giants are the first opponent to face Kellen Moore's offense for a second time. They played him in week one, and I remember before that game that I talked to Pat Shurmur, and he said that they were more concerned about the unknowns that Moore and the offense represented than the role Ezekiel Elliott was going to play, having just returned from his holdout. And those fears were obviously realized because Dak Prescott threw for 400 yards and three touchdowns and had a perfect passer rating with Kellen Moore calling those plays. So tonight I was told by some people in the organization as they were boarding the buses, leaving the locker room, that they were played totally different tonight, that the Giants had a sense of how they wanted to play the game this time that they lacked in week one. And what they tried to do week one was to take Elliott away and force them to throw the football and prove they could win with Dak throwing the football, which they did. And so tonight what they attempted to do was encourage the Cowboys to run the football with Elliott because they were not going to give them the downfield passing games, passing plays that they dominated with in week one. They were going to force them to be either run the football and hold the score down that way, or see if Elliott or if Prescott would be patient enough to take the underneath throws and advance the ball down the field that way. And in other years, I think the Cowboys probably would have struggled offensively, but now they feel like they can win either way. They think they can win with the quarterback throwing the football, or they think they can run the football as they've done in the past and win that way. They just have to figure out what they're seeing in the game and make the adjustment. And I think Prescott, you know, really did that. He had a very bad first half, but really came on in the second half. I think he was, 11 for 15 with two touchdowns in the second half. And won his sixth straight start against the Giants. The only Cowboy quarterback to win more than six consecutive starts is Roger Staubach. He won 11 in a row back in the 70s. So, and then, you know, the clutch pass to Amari Cooper on 3rd and 12, 45-yarder to kind of close it out, beat DeAndre Baker, who was called for a questionable interference call on a previous third down. The nearest defender on that play was more than 6 yards away. That's the most wide open Amari Cooper has been on any of his touchdown catches in Dallas.
Yeah, that, and they described it, Ed, as you were watching the same thing feed I was watching. It was like they were in two different coverages. He thought he was in man, yeah, and they were in a two-man or kind of a zone-type coverage. And
I think he played zone and everybody else played man.
That might have been it. I'll say this. Yeah. DeAndre Baker, he had a rough outing the first time around, and I think officials have seen him get burned so much that even when he has good coverage, they just go ahead and throw the flag, because he's had such a rough start to his career. But they were obviously very upset about that call. The one thing I would say, Ed, we don't have to get too much into the officiating, because Lord knows, I mean, we've talked a bunch about that this season. I'm just talking about everybody has. But you cannot get – I think what we've learned is that rule was put in place to challenge pass interference because of one game and because of one play, obviously involving the Saints and the Rams, and there literally is almost no way to get a call in that way. I mean, they overturn those now. What is the percentage? I mean, it's like an insanely small amount. Let's say they're like 50-something times, and now they've overturned it like 5 or 6 times. I mean, it has to be the most egregious thing. And quite honestly,
ridiculously egregious ones not be overturned on a coach's challenge. They only change them. They only change those calls when it's a replay review in the last 2 minutes of a half or the last 2 minutes of the game. That's what we've seen. And so the only time that this new rule is going to take effect and be worthwhile for a coach to challenge is if it's in a playoff game. Other than that, it's really not going to be enforced. It was only enforced to prevent the kind of situation that we saw in the postseason last year where, you know, you could make the argument that the officials blew a call that was not subject to review and sent the wrong team to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I think that has a huge role in it. Ed, as we kind of look at different aspects of this offense, I thought Zeke ran the ball extremely hard, and every time they leaned on him, I think good things happened, and he was able to get out there and just kind of break the game open. I think that was a good performance by the offensive line, continuing to clear the path for him. Concerns, Tyron Smith continues to be kind of the modern-day Phil Pozderek. He got the two holding penalties. One negated a touchdown, a really nice pass and route by Randall Cobb that was called back because of the holding penalty. And that is it just bears watching. You know, I know he's still a good player, but I would say I don't have the numbers in front of me, but if you ask me, okay, who is drawing the most flags for this team on the offensive line, I might go either Lyle Collins or Tyron Smith.
Connor Williams.
Oh, maybe him too. But
that's who you would think.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying, yeah.
And you wonder, you know, now that he's now missed, at least three games each of the past three seasons in a row, even though he's still a relatively young player, you just, with all the injuries he's had and involving his back, you just start to question whether this is beginning sort of the process of him becoming a descending player, and now he's having to grab and hold in situations to avoid being beat, where in previous years he either dominated or he had such a reputation that officials didn't bother throwing flags on him.
I think you're right. There was some, a lot of strange things in that first half, but including the black cat. But they were able to turn around. Jordan Lewis, a man who always seems to make plays, he makes a big play late in the game. And then I would just say in sort of closing thoughts on the offense, I mean, Gallup is a guy you want to continue to get the football to because he makes huge plays. And I think think about the outstanding individual plays that were made. It was not even a great throw to Jarwin, and he just comes racing through their defense. And I don't know if it's just a Meadowlands thing or if the guy needs to have more touches, because it's pretty amazing to watch a big 6'6", whatever he is, guy go, you know, as fast as he is. And he obviously at that age, he's so much younger than Witten. He just moves quicker, that's a very dynamic player that they probably should use a little bit more.
Yeah, his 42-yard touchdown was the sixth touchdown of his career, five of which have come against the Giants, four of them at MetLife Stadium. And Rick Goslin added this, which is kind of to your point about maybe they should consider using him more, as much as they have high regard for Jason Witten and all he brings and means. Jarwin has catches of 42, 28, 35, and 22 yards this year, and he only has 12 total catches yet. Four of them are huge plays of more than 20 yards.
Yeah, I think you've got to, and I think the reason they targeted Witten so much tonight was because Booger and Joe Tessitore were there, and they just wanted to give
them. They wanted to talk about their great year with Witten in the booth.
Yeah,
when he had hair.
I know, and then it was just like, oh, our old partner. There's our old partner. There's our old buddy. I saw the pictures of them getting together for their, I don't know. I would think that.
Production meeting.
Yeah, the production meeting. It seems like it'd be a little awkward to me, but Jason seems to be handling it really well. You don't comment on this because you are a member of ESPN. I can. But at some point, my wife just looked up. I didn't even know if she was paying that close attention. She just goes, now, who's this guy talking so much? And I said, "Well, that's Booger. That's Booger McFarland." So anyway, there's a lot of stuff being said during those games. Hearing how much he talks and how much Tessitore talks, it makes me know. You know, like the three-man booth. It's hard to think back and think how in the world were all those people talking, and that maybe there was a reason it didn't really work. But anyway, Ed, That's for me to say, and for you just to calmly sit there and not comment.
Yeah, there are probably people who think the two of us talk too much on this podcast.
Oh, I would. Fredo's raising his hand as we speak. I know you take a great deal of notes. You're like me. You like to fill several notepads with notes and figures and stats. Cowboys go to 5-3. I'll just say, if they had gone to 4-4, if they'd gone on and lost this game, it was going to be another round of let's throw Garrett overboard. They live to see another day.
Immediately.
Yeah, and now they got another. They have a big, big home game coming in with the Vikings. What are your biggest sort of takeaways as we begin, you know, a short week, and they'll be back in there working Wednesday and have to turn around and play those Vikings. Vikings coming off a tough loss, a last-minute loss in Zimmer.
At Kansas City.
Yeah, at Kansas
City. And coached obviously by Mike Zimmer, longtime Cowboys assistant here, and a guy who knows his franchise pretty well. Very disappointing loss for him. I had a chance to talk to him last week as I was covering that Kansas City game. And the Vikings went in there with him feeling like, you know, Kirk Cousins was coming off the NFC Offensive Player of the Month award. He had, in his previous three games, had 10 touchdown passes and one interception, which was the same numbers that Aaron Rodgers had generated during that same period of time. So that's the level at which he was playing. But he just has not been able to beat opponents with winning records. He hasn't been able to beat opponents who are two games over 500 like the Cowboys are now and will be when they face him at Jerry World next Sunday night. He hasn't won primetime games. And you know, talking to Zimmer, he really felt like that Cousins was benefiting from the fact that they really created an offensive identity, and it was one that was kind of exactly what he envisioned when he fired the offensive coordinator in the middle of last season, John DeFilippo, and made Kevin Stefanski and Gary Kubiak in charge of the offense, which is built around Dalvin Cook, a player I mentioned earlier. You know, very good. It led the NFL in rushing going into last week and in total yards from scrimmage. So that's the challenge for the Cowboys. But the Chiefs wound up winning the game without Patrick Mahomes, the reigning league MVP. They did it with Matt Moore, a former Cowboys backup quarterback, who really stood up to the pressure that the Vikings generated. The Chiefs won the game despite playing with their backup quarterback, despite going 2-for-15 on third down, and despite having the game's only turnover, they wind up winning on the final play of the game on a field goal. So I think the Cowboys are a better team than the Vikings. I thought maybe when the schedule came out early in the year, it looked like this might be a game that would be difficult for Dallas to win, and it may be. The Vikings are a worthy opponent, but all of the Vikings' losses this year have come on the road. And so I think the Cowboys have a substantial advantage in terms of you know, how they look at this game. They've dominated their divisional opponents and are just 1-3 against non-division teams. But you talk about a guy who can play in prime time. Well, maybe not Kirk Cousins, but tonight was Dak Prescott's 14th primetime win since 2016, ties for the most in the league during that period.
Wow. Well, he gets a ton of opportunities. I mean, that is that is good.
Well, Kirk probably doesn't mind not getting a lot of opportunities.
yeah, that's
given his lack of success in that arena.
That's for sure. So that'll be interesting to watch that. You know, like you said, I was noticing our buddy Loffenberg said Dak's best attribute may be that he is good late in games. As you pointed out, Ed, 11 of 15, the two touchdowns the second half. The only problem is, I mean, that's great, and I'm not saying that's not a good attribute, but you also, at some point, to become more well-rounded, you need to be good off the start. You know, you need to be good, and the Cowboys haven't been good enough early in games. In fact, they've been really bad at times, and I think that, you know, against some decent teams like Minnesota, that'll get you beat. You can come back and overcome that against the New York Giants of the world, but against some better teams, if you come out and have that stuff, well, you'll have what happened against Green Bay, and you'll get down 31-3 if you play like that. All right.
It's always an adventure when the Cowboys have to play a non-division opponent, as we mentioned. This was their eighth straight victory over a divisional opponent. That's the longest active streak in the NFL. That's the reason, you know, the Cowboys being 4-0 against NFC East opponents, that's the reason they have the division lead. And it's a division where a five-game win. It's the only division where there's a five-game winner atop the division. Everybody else who leads the division has won at least seven games.
All right, and
in the NFC.
Yeah, one last medical note that came in from Archer. Heath needed 12 stitches to close a cut on his right knee. That was that he saved the touchdown on that the opening kickoff of the second half, made the play, but got hurt on that play and never returned to the game. 12 stitches. So, boy, I tell you, adds insult to injury for him, a guy who this fan base constantly roots to be replaced. But, you know, he's always there. And, I think he's been somewhat steady at times for them, so you know he'll still hang around. Although fans have been desperate for years now to replace him. Ed, good work this evening. Appreciate you staying up late, and we will look forward to your work from we'll tape live from after Sunday night football against the Vikings.
Right, that lavish suite at Jerry World will be there very late into the early morning hours again to bring you the next version of the Doomsday Podcast.
Yeah, it'll be big.
Let's let people enjoy this one first.
Oh, yeah, yeah, please. Please listen to this, download it in all the different areas that you do, and then tell a friend about it, write a review, and just say kind things. Thank you to the Frito Nation, Mark Frito Friedman, Hudson Financial Group. Ross is with us, by the way. Ross Hudson in the studio with us tonight. So insurance and investments, it's a great place. And again, let me give you that number one more time. It's 469-402-0320. You should prepare for doomsday. Is that you know, okay? That'll be our new thing. Okay, yeah. I just came up with that on the fly. All right, everybody, have a great week, and we will talk to you next Sunday night from AT&T Stadium following the Cowboys game against the Vikings. Good night, everybody.
Stockings have been hung. You're praying for your daughter, lighting candles for your son. They're living in the city now, you don't see them anymore. This year will not be like the ones before. And the streets are all but empty, the bars have all shut down, and it's hard to find a friend inside this godforsaken town. That emptiness it feels from your head down to your toes. Sorry, baby, that's just the way it goes. Once you were a young girl with lovers by the score, money by the handful, you've never wanted more. But men tend to leave you as time has its way, and they leave behind little mouths to feed your dreams. And the days go by so slowly when it used to go so fast. Whiskey does not taste as good when you're all.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.